Chapter 40. The Way Back. Dame Hickory, here's a wolf at your door, his teeth grinning white, and his tongue wagging sore. Nay, said Dame Hickory, ye false fairy, but a wolf 'twas indeed, and famished was he. Walter de la Mare, Dame Hickory. The first thing that Hazel learned the next morning was that Threonlosa had died during the night. Thethuthenang was distressed, for it was she who had picked Threonlosa as one of the more sturdy and sensible does in the mark, and persuaded her to join in the escape. After they had come through the bridge together, she had helped her ashore and fallen asleep beside her in the undergrowth, hoping that she might have recovered by the next day. But she had woken to find Threonlosa gone, and searching, had found her in a clump of reeds downstream. Evidently, the poor creature had felt that she was going to die, and in the manner of animals, had slipped away. The news depressed Hazel. He knew that they had been lucky to get so many does out of Ephrafah and to escape from Woundwort without having to stand and fight. The plan had been a good one, but the storm and the frightening efficiency of the Ephrafans had nearly defeated it. For all the courage of Bigwig and of Silver, they would have failed without Kahar. Now Kahar was going to leave them. Bigwig was wounded, and his own leg was none too good. With the does to look after, they would not be able to travel in the open as fast or as easily as they had on the way down from Watership. He would have liked to stay where they were for a few days, so that Bigwig could recover its strength and the does find their feet and get used to life outside of Warren. But the place, he realized, was hopelessly inhospitable. Although there was good cover, it was too wet for rabbits. Besides, it was evidently close to a road busier than any they had known. Soon after daylight, they began to hear and smell Hrudadol passing, not so far away as the breadth of a small field. There was continual disturbance, and the does in particular were startled and uneasy. Threonlosa's death made matters worse. Worried by the noise and vibration, and unable to feed, the does kept wandering downstream to look at the body and whisper together about the strange and dangerous surroundings. He consulted Blackberry, who pointed out that probably it would not be long before men found the boat. Then very likely several would be close by for some time. This decided Hazel that they had better set out at once and try to reach somewhere where they could rest more easily. He could hear and smell that the swamp extended a long way downstream. With the road lying to the south, the only way seemed to be northward, over the bridge, which was in any case the way home. Taking Bigwig with him, he climbed the bank to the grass track. The first thing they saw was Kahar, picking slugs out of a clump of hemlock near the bridge. They came up to him without speaking and began to nibble the short grass nearby. After a little while, Kahar said,
"Now you getting mothers, Mr. Hazel? All go fine, eh?"
"Yes. We'd never have done it without you, Kahar. I hear you turned up just in time to save Bigwig last night."
"This bad rabbit pig fella, he go fight me? Plenty clever, too."
"Yes, he got a shock for once, though."
Yeah, Mr. Hazel, soon his men come. What you do now?"
"We're going back to our warren, Kahar, if we can get there."
"He's finish here now for me. I go to big water."
"Shall we see you again, Kahar?"
"You go back hills? Stay there?"
"Yes, we mean to get there. It's going to be hard going with so many rabbits, and there'll be Ephrafan patrols to dodge, I expect."
"You get there. Later on is winter. Plenty cold, plenty storm on big water, plenty bird come in. Then I come back, see where you live."
"Don't forget then, Kahar, will you?" said Bigwig. "We shall be looking out for you. Come down suddenly, like you did last night."
Yeah, frighten all mothers and the little rabbits. All little pigwigs ran away."
Kahar arched his wings and rose into the air. He flew over the parapet of the bridge and upstream. Then he turned in a circle to the left, came back over the grass track, and flew straight down it, skimming just over the rabbits' heads. He gave one of his raucous cries and was gone to the southward. They gazed after him as he disappeared above the trees.
"Oh, fly away, great bird so white," said Bigwig. "You know, he made me feel I could fly too. That big water, I wish I could see it."
As they continued to look in the direction where Kahar had gone, Hazel noticed for the first time a cottage at the far end of the track, where the grass sloped up to join the road. A man, taking care to keep still, was leaning over the hedge and watching them intently. Hazel stamped and bolted into the undergrowth of the swamp, with Bigwig hard on his heels.
"You know what he's thinking about?" said Bigwig. "He's thinking about the vegetables in his garden."
"I know," replied Hazel, "and we shan't be able to keep this lot away from them once they get the idea into their heads. The quicker we push on, the better."
Shortly afterward, the rabbits set out across the park to the north. Bigwig soon found that he was not up to a long journey. His wound was painful, and the shoulder muscle would not stand hard use. Hazel was still lame, and the does, though willing and obedient, showed that they knew little about the life of Hlessel. It was a trying time. In the days that followed, days of clear sky and fine weather, Blackavar proved his worth again and again, until Hazel came to rely on him as much as on any of his veterans. There was a great deal more to him than anyone could have guessed. When Bigwig had determined not to come out of Efrafar without Blackavar, he had been moved entirely by pity for a miserable, helpless victim of Wundworth's ruthlessness. It turned out, however, that Blackavar, when not crushed by humiliation and ill-treatment, was a good cut above the ordinary. His story was an unusual one. His mother had not been born an Efrafan. She had been one of the rabbits taken prisoner when Wundwort attacked the warren at Nutley Copse. She had mated with an Efrafan captain and had had no other mate. He had been killed on wide patrol. Blackavar, proud of his father, had grown up with the resolve to become an officer in the Ausler. But together with this, and paradoxically, there had come to him from his mother a certain resentment against Efrafar, and a feeling that they should have no more of him than he cared to give them. Captain Mallow, to whose mark, the right four, he had been sent on trial, had praised his courage and endurance, but had not failed to notice the proud detachment of his nature. When the right flank needed a junior officer to help Captain Cherville, it was Avens and not Blackavar who had been selected by the council. Blackavar, who knew his own worth, felt convinced that his mother's blood had prejudiced the council against him. While still full of his wrongs, he had met Heisenthlay and made himself a secret friend and adviser of the discontented does in the right four. He had begun by urging them to try to get the council's consent to their leaving Efrafar. If they had succeeded, they would have asked for him to be allowed to go with them. But when the does' deputation to the council failed, Blackavar turned to the idea of escape. At first he had meant to take the does with him, but his nerve, strained to the limit, as Bigwig's had been, by the dangers and uncertainties of conspiracy, had given way, and in the end he had simply made a dash on his own to be caught by Campion. Under the punishment inflicted by the council, his mercurial spirit had fallen low, and he had become the apathetic wretch the sight of whom had so much shocked Bigwig. Yet, at the whispered message in the Hraka pit, this spirit had flickered up again, where another's might well have failed to do so, and he had been ready to set all on the hazard and have another shot. Now, free among these easy-going strangers, he saw himself as a trained Efrafan, using his skill to help them in their need. Although he did all that he was told, he did not hesitate to make suggestions as well, particularly when it came to reconnoitering and looking for signs of danger. Hazel, who was ready to accept advice from anybody when he thought it was good, listened to most of what he said, and was content to leave it to Bigwig, for whom, naturally, Blackavar entertained a tremendous respect, to see that he did not overreach himself in his warm-hearted, rather candid zeal. After 2 or 3 days of slow, careful journeying, with many halts in cover, they found themselves, late one afternoon, once more in sight of Caesar's Belt, but further west than before,
close to a little copse at the top of some rising ground. Everyone was tired, and when they had fed, "Evening Sylphlay every day, just as you promised," said Heisenthlay to Bigwig.
Bluebell and Speedwell suggested that it might be worthwhile to dig some scrapes in the light soil under the trees and live there for a day or two. Hazel felt willing enough, but Fiver needed persuasion.
"I know we can do with the rest, but somehow I don't altogether like it, Hazel Ra," he said. "I suppose I've got to try to think why."
"Not on my account," answered Hazel, "but I doubt you'll shift the others this time. One or two of these does are ready for mudder, as Kahar would say, and that's the real reason why Bluebell and the rest are prepared to be at the trouble of digging scrapes. Surely it'll be all right at that rate, won't it? You know what they say, rabbit underground, rabbit safe and sound."
"Well, you may be right," said Fiver. "That Filtheril is a beautiful doe. I'd like a chance to get to know her better. After all, it's not natural to rabbits, is it? On and on, day after day."
Later, however, when Blackavar returned with Dandelion from a patrol they had undertaken on their own initiative, he came out more strongly against the idea.
"This is no place to stop, Hazel Ra," he said. "No white patrol would bivouac here. It's fox country. We ought to try to get further before dark."
Bigwig's shoulder had been hurting him a good deal during the afternoon, and he felt low and surly. It seemed to him that Blackavar was being clever at other people's expense. If he got his way, they would have to go on, tired as they were, until they came to somewhere which was suitable by Ephrathan standards. There they would be safe, no more and no less than they would have been if they had stayed at this copse. But Blackavar would be the clever fellow who had saved them from a fox that had never existed outside his own fancy. His Ephrathan scoutcraft act was getting to be a bore. It was time someone called his bluff.
"There are likely to be foxes anywhere about the Downs," said Bigwig sharply. "Why is this fox country more than anywhere else?"
Tact was a quality which Blackavar valued about as much as Bigwig did, and now he made the worst possible reply.
"I can't exactly tell you why," he said. "I've formed a strong impression, but it's hard to explain quite what it's based on."
"Oh, an impression, eh?" sneered Bigwig. "Did you see any Hraka? Pick up any scent? Or was it just a message from little green mice singing under a toadstool?"
Blackavar felt hurt. Bigwig was the last rabbit he wanted to quarrel with.
"Ye think I'm a fool, then?" he answered,
his Ephrathan accent becoming more marked.
"No, there was neither Hraka nor scent. But I still think that this is a place where a fox comes. On these patrols we used to do, you know, we..."
"Did you see or smell anything?" said Bigwig to Dandelion.
Well, I'm not really quite sure," said Dandelion. "I mean, Blackavar seems to know an awful lot about patrolling, and he asked me whether I didn't feel a sort of..."
"Well, we can go on like this all night," said Bigwig. "Blackavar, do you know that earlier this summer, before we had the benefit of your experience, we went for days across every kind of country, fields, heather, woods, downs, and never lost one rabbit?"
"It's the idea of scrapes, that's all," said Blackavar apologetically. "New scrapes get noticed, and digging can be heard a surprisingly long way, you know."
"Let him alone," said Hazel, before Bigwig could speak again.
"You didn't get him out of Ephrafa to bully him. Look, Blackavar, I suppose I've got to decide this. I think you're probably right, and there is a certain amount of risk. But we're at risk all the time until we get back to our warren, and everyone's so tired that I think we might just as well stop here for a day or two. We shall be all the better for it."
Enough scrapes were finished by soon after sunset, and next day, sure enough, all the rabbits felt a great deal better for a night underground. As Hazel had foreseen, there was some mating and a scuffle or two, but no one was hurt. By the evening, a kind of holiday spirit prevailed. Hazel's leg was stronger, and Bigwig felt fitter than at any time since he went into Ephrafa. The does, harassed and bony 2 days before, were beginning to look quite sleek.
On the second morning, Silfley did not begin until sometime after dawn. A light wind was blowing straight into the north bank of the copse, where the scrapes had been dug, and Bluebell, when he came up, swore he could smell rabbits on it.
"That's old Holly pressing his chin glands for his hazelrah," he said. "A rabbit's sneeze on the morning breeze sets homesick hearts aglow."
"Sitting with his rump in a chicory clump and longing for a nice plump doe," replied Hazel.
"That won't do, Hazelrah," said Bluebell. "He's got two does up there."
"Only hutch does," replied Hazel.
"I dare say they're fairly tough and fast by now,
but all the same, they'll never be quite like our own kind. Clover, for instance, she'd never go far from the hole on Silfley, because she knew she couldn't run as fast as we can. But these Effafin does, you see, they've been kept in by sentries all their lives. Yet now there aren't any. They wander about quite happily. Look at those two, right away under the bank there. They feel they can... Oh, great Frith!"
As he spoke, a tawny shape, dog-like, sprang out of the overhanging nut bushes as silently as light from behind a cloud. It landed between the two does, grabbed one by the neck, and dragged it up the bank in a flash. The wind veered, and the reek of fox came over the grass. With stamping and flashing of tails, every rabbit on the slope dashed for cover. Hazel and Bluebell found themselves crouched with Blackavar. The Effrafin was matter of fact and detached.
"Poor little beast," he said. "You see, their instincts are weakened by life in the mark. Fancy feeding under bushes on the windward side of a wood. Never mind, Hazelrah. These things happen. But look, I tell you what. Unless there are two Homble, which would be very bad luck, we've got till Neafrith at least to get away. That Homba won't be hunting any more for some time. I suggest we all move on as soon as we can."
With a word of agreement, Hazel went out to call the rabbits together. They made a scattered but swift run to the northeast, along the edge of a field of ripening wheat. No one spoke of the doe. They had covered more than 3/4 of a mile before Bigwig and Hazel halted to rest and to make sure that no one had fallen behind. As Blackavar came up with Heisenthlay, Bigwig said,
"You told us how it would be, didn't you? And I was the one who wouldn't listen."
"Told you," said Blackavar. "I don't understand."
"That there was likely to be a fox."
"I don't remember, I'm afraid. But I don't see that any of us could possibly have known. Anyway, what's a doe, more or less?"
Bigwig looked at him in astonishment, but Blackavar, apparently unconcerned, either to stress what he had said or to break off the talk, simply began to nibble the grass. Bigwig, puzzled, moved away, and himself began to feed a little distance off, with Heisenthlay and Hazel.
"What's he getting at?"
he asked after a while.
"You were all there when he warned us, 2 nights ago, that there was likely to be a fox. I treated him badly."
"In Effrafa," said Heisenthlay, "if a rabbit gave advice, and the advice wasn't accepted, he immediately forgot it, and so did everyone else. Blackavar thought what Hazel decided, and whether it turned out later to be right or wrong was all the same. His own advice had never been given."
"I can believe that," said Bigwig. "Effrafa, ants led by a dog. But we're not in Effrafa now. Has he really forgotten that he warned us?"
"Probably he really has. But whether or not, you'd never get him to admit that he warned you or to listen while you told him he'd been right. He could no more do that than pass Hraka underground."
"But you're an Effrafin. Do you think like that too?"
"I'm a doe," said Heisenthlay.
During the early afternoon, they began to approach the belt, and Bigwig was the first to recognize the place where Dandelion had told the story of the Black Rabbit of Inlay.
"It was the same fox, you know," he said to Hazel. "That's almost certain. I ought to have realized how likely it was that..."
"Look here," said Hazel. "You know very well what we owe to you. The does all think El Herrera sent you to get them out of Effrafa. They believe no one else could have done it. As for what happened this morning, it was my fault as much as yours. but I never supposed we would get home without losing some rabbits. In fact, we've lost two, and that's better than I expected. We can get back to the honeycomb tonight if we press on. Let's forget about the Homber now, Bigwig. It can't be altered. And try to... Hello? Who's this?
They were coming to a thicket of juniper and dog roses, tangled at ground level with nettles and trails of bryony, on which the berries were now beginning to ripen and turn red. As they stopped to pick a line into the undergrowth, four big rabbits appeared out of the long grass and sat looking down at them. One of the does, coming up the slope a little way behind, stamped and turned to bolt. They heard Blackavar check her sharply.
"Well, why didn't you answer his question, Thleli?"
said one of the rabbits.
"Who am I?"
There was a pause. Then Hazel spoke.
"I can see their ephrophons because they're marked," he said. "Is that Woundwort?"
"No," said Blackavar at his shoulder. "That's Captain Campion."
"I see," said Hazel.
"Well, I've heard of you, Campion. I don't know whether you mean us any harm, but the best thing you can do is to let well alone. As far as we're concerned, our dealings with Ephrafar are finished."
"You may think that," replied Campion, "but you'll find it's otherwise. That doe behind you must come with us, and so must any others that are with you."
As he spoke, Silver and Acorn appeared lower down the slope, followed by Thethuthunang. After a glance at the Ephrafans, Silver spoke quickly to Thethuthunang, who slipped back through the burdocks. Then he came up to Hazel.
"I've sent for the white bird, Hazel," he said quietly. As a piece of bluff, it was effective. They saw Campion look upward nervously, and another of the patrol glanced back to the cover of the bushes.
"What you're saying is stupid," said Hazel to Campion. "There are a lot of us here, and unless you've got more rabbits than I can see, we are too many for you."
Campion hesitated. The truth was that for once in his life, he had acted rashly. He had seen Hazel and Bigwig approaching with Blackavar and one doe behind them. In his eagerness to have something really worthwhile to show on his return to the council, he had jumped to the conclusion that they were alone. The Ephrafans usually kept fairly close together in the open, and it had not occurred to Campion that other rabbits might straggle more widely. He had seen a golden opportunity to attack, perhaps kill, the detestable Thleli and Blackavar, together with their one companion, who seemed to be lame, and bring the doe back to the council. This he could certainly have done, and he had decided to confront rather than ambush them, in the hope that the bucks would surrender without fighting. But now, as more rabbits began to appear in ones and twos, he realized that he had made a mistake.
"I have a great many more rabbits," he said. "The does must stay here. The rest of you can go. Otherwise, we shall kill you."
"Very well," said Hazel. "Bring your whole patrol into the open, and we'll do as you say."
By this time, a considerable number of rabbits were coming up the slope. Campion and his patrol looked at them in silence, but made no move.
"You'd better stay where you are," said Hazel at length. "If you try to interfere with us, it will be the worse for you. Silver and Blackberry, take the does and go on. The rest of us will join you."
"Hazel Ra," whispered Blackavar. "The patrol must be killed. All of them. They mustn't report back to the general." This had also occurred to Hazel, but as he thought of the dreadful fight, and the four Ephrafans actually torn to pieces, for that was what it would mean, he could not find it in his heart to do it. Like Bigwig, he felt a reluctant liking for Campion. Besides, it would take some doing. Quite probably some of his own rabbits would be killed, certainly wounded. They would not reach the honeycomb that night, and they would leave a fresh blood trail wherever they went. Apart from his dislike of the whole idea, there were disadvantages that might be fatal.
"No, we'll let them alone," he replied firmly.
Blackavar was silent, and they sat watching Campion as the last of the does disappeared through the bushes.
"Now," said Hazel, "take your patrol and go the same way that you saw us come. Don't speak. Go."
Campion and the patrol made off downhill, and Hazel, relieved to be rid of them so easily, hurried after Silver, with the others close behind. Once through the belt, they made excellent progress. After the rest of a day and a half, the does were in good shape. The promise of an end to the journey that night, and the thought that they had escaped both the fox and the patrol, made them eager and responsive. The only cause of delay was Blackavar, who seemed uneasy and kept hanging about in the rear. At last, in the late afternoon, Hazel sent for him and told him to go ahead on the line of the path they were following and look out for the long strip of the beach hangar in the dip on the morning side. Blackavar had not been gone very long before he came racing back.
"Hazelra, I've been quite close to that wood you spoke of," he said, "and there are two rabbits playing about on a patch of short grass just outside it."
"I'll come and see," said Hazel. "Dandelion, you come too, will you?"
As they ran down the hill to the right of the track, Hazel fairly skipped to recognize the beach hangar. He noticed one or two yellow leaves and a faint touch of bronze here and there in the green boughs. Then he caught sight of Buckthorn and Strawberry running toward them across the grass.
"Hazel Ra!" cried Buckthorn. "Dandelion! What happened? Where are the others? Did you get any does? Is everyone all right?"
"They'll be here very soon," said Hazel. "Yes, we've got a lot of does, and everyone who went has come back. This is Blackavar, who's come out of Ephrafah."
"Good for him," said Strawberry. "Oh, Hazelra, we've watched at the end of the wood every evening since you went. Holly and Boxwood are all right. They're back at the Warren. And what do you think? Clover's going to kindle. That's fine, isn't it?"
"Splendid," said Hazel. "She'll be the first. My goodness, we've had a time, I can tell you. And so I will. What a story! But it must wait a bit. Come on, let's go and bring the others in."
By sunset, the whole party, 20 rabbits all told, had made their way up the length of the beach hangar and reached the warren. They fared among the dew and the long shadows, with twilight already fallen in the fields below. Then they crowded down into the honeycomb to hear Hazel and Bigwig tell the story of their adventures to those who had waited so eagerly and so long to hear it. As the last rabbits disappeared underground, the wide patrol, which had followed them from Caesar's Belt with superlative skill and discipline, veered away in a half-circle to the east and then turned for Ephrafah. Campion was expert at finding a night's refuge in the open. He planned to rest until dawn and then cover the 3 miles back by evening of the following day.